Chapter 6. Which trumps monster?
He came back.
Eva didn't realize she'd said this out loud until Khalil and Belinda both whipped their heads in her direction.
What? Asked Khalil.
Came back where? Do you know him? Belinda whispered, a hand covering her mic. The audience was all a flutter, and it was taking Shane forever to get to the stage because there were hands to shake and things to sign, event programs, books, one flirty girl's forearm.
I just meant I can't believe he's making a public appearance, Eva sputtered. You've met him, right?
Yeah, we both had Fulbrights in 2006. We spent a summer riding at the University of London, whispered Belinda. But I barely saw him.
Put it this way. There's a pub on every corner in East London.
Overrated, pronounced Khalil. I was supposed to interview him for Vibe once. He kept me waiting in a West Hollywood Starbucks for 4 hours, then showed up, rambled about a turtle for 10 minutes, and ghosted. The story got killed, of course. Clown. This is why Negroes can't have nice things.
The hate is strong in this one, Belinda said with a snark.
He glared at her. I've grown weary of you. Eva was no longer listening, because there was Shane. On stage with them, swept up into Cece's possessive embrace to the tune of 1,000 iPhone snaps. Then Cece let him go, and the panelists stood up. Eva unsteady in her skyscraper heels and agita. Shane gave Khalil a pound and Belinda a hug, and then it was just him and Eva. She was shaking uncontrollably. There was no way she could hug him or even step an inch closer to him. Instead, she offered her hand. It jutted out from her arm, a strange appendage, and he shook it.
I'm Shane, he said, her hand still in his. I love your work.
Thanks. I'm Eva.
Eva sounded unsure of her own name. He squeezed her hand a little, a private gesture telling her to relax. She immediately yanked it out of his grasp. A New York Times intern sprinted out of the wings with an extra chair, scooted it between Cece and Belinda, and handed Shane a mic. Everyone sat down. Khalil was fuming.
Well, started Cece, this person needs no introduction, I'm sure. Let's give Shane Hall a warm welcome, shall we? Shane, you can join us for a couple minutes, can't you?
Cece graced him with a blinding, proud mama smile, like the way Diana used to look at Michael.
I'm fucking brilliant. I discovered this unicorn.
I mean, do I have to? Said Shane, with an amused chuckle in his voice.
He grew up in Southeast Washington, D.C., and the inflection still lived in his vaguely southern-sounding, slow accent. That I mean took him 10 years to get out.
You have no choice. Payback for allowing that Random House editor to steal you from me,
Cece gestured toward Eva and company.
But I'm not the best public speaker. I really just came to watch. This is awkward.
He looked out into the crowd apologetically. But when Cece Sinclair tells you to do something, you do it. I ain't crazy.
Unconfirmed, mumbled Khalil.
Before Shane could address this shade, a young woman raised her hand. She was wearing a snapback that said, Make America New York. Her face was beet red.
Mr. Hall, she stammered. Not to be rude, but I love you.
He smiled. Rude would be I hate you. She laughed way too hard.
I can't believe you're here. Just had to tell you, 8 is the reason I write. 8, the character, is me. You never see angsty, depressed black girls in pop culture. There's no black Prozac Nation or Girl Interrupted. I love that she narrates every book.
Thank you. He shifted a little in his seat. I like her, too.
Is 8 based on a real person? You describe her so intimately, it's like I'm peeking in on something I shouldn't see.
Do you think 8's real?
Definitely.
She said, nodding. Then she is.
That's not an answer.
I know, he grinned.
And then Eva had to do it. Finally, she had the nerve to look over at him,
and regretted it instantly. Age had made the skin around his eyes crinklier. Eva had forgotten about the scar snaking across his nose. He had scars everywhere. Once while he was sleeping, she'd counted them all, traced them with her mouth, and then named them like constellations. Perfect jeans, rugged boots, expensive watch, sinewy, lanky build, two-day stubble, simple white tee. Could have been Hanes or Helmut Lang. Fuck him, it was exactly what she wished she were wearing. How am I going to survive this? A blonde journalist Eva recognized from Publishers Weekly raised her hand. Cece nodded in her direction.
Speaking of eight, started the blonde, you've gotten some flack for writing exclusively from a female point of view. Is that fair? As a man, do you feel qualified to speak from a feminine place?
At this point, Eva, Belinda, and Khalil were effectively backburnered. Shane chewed his bottom lip and stared into his mic like it held the answers to every mystery.
I guess I don't think a lot about whether or not I'm qualified to do things. I just do them.
But it's a ballsy move as a man to explore young female angst in such an intimate way.
I don't think I'm exploring female angst. I'm just writing a character who has angst. He rubbed his hands on his jeans, looking deeply uncomfortable. Novelists should stretch beyond their experience, right? If I can't adequately manage a female voice, then I'm probably in the wrong profession and should revise my LinkedIn.
Oh, do you have LinkedIn?
No, he said, his eyes playful. To Cece, he whispered,
told you I was bad at this.
And in that moment, whatever was holding Eva together snapped. Suddenly, she was volcanically offended by his existence. She'd worked herself into a frenzy prepping for this event, running lines with Audrey and squeezing into this dress. But Shane was allowed to be exactly himself his whole career. He'd done whatever the hell he'd wanted, evading interviewers, dropping off the face of the planet, sleepwalking through events Eva would kill to be invited to, and generally been awarded for bad behavior in a way that, in the history of creative pursuits, no female artist had ever been indulged. Women didn't get to be bad boys.
I don't think. I just do.
Shane made it all look so easy. Everything Eva did was so effortful. And the worst part? This was supposed to be her moment to prove that she was a legitimate author, a force to be reckoned with, and it was shot to hell the second the one who mattered showed up. Was this even her real life or a Mona Scott Young production? For all these reasons, as well as the older, darker ones, she had to say something. I hear what the reporter's saying, started Eva slowly to quell the tremble in her voice. You're co-opting an experience you know nothing about. Eight's troubled. She self-harms. She's suicidal, and you idealize it, making her this adorable, sad chick. Depression isn't a catastrophe of a girl weeping a single pretty tear while gazing out of rain-streaked windows and dropping one-liners. Depression is tragic. Eight is tragic. And a male writer romanticizing female mental illness is inappropriate.
You're right, Shane said.
He scratched his jaw slowly, thinking, and then dragged his eyes over to Eva. For the first time, she met his gaze, which was a mistake. The air had gotten thick. They both blinked. Once. Twice. And then continued to stare at one another. Not stare, gawk. With such single-minded focus that the crowd was forgotten, the event was forgotten. Belinda and Khalil sat between them looking back and forth like they were in the stands at Wimbledon. Cece's eyes grew to anime proportions. What were they witnessing?
It's true. I'm not a woman, started Shane.
Exactly.
And you're not a vampire or a man.
Bloop, muttered Belinda.
And yet Sebastian? He's one of the most vivid, true portrayals of masculinity I've ever read, especially in the third and fifth books. Sebastian literally and figuratively sucks the life out of everything around him, and he'll drain Gia one day, too. He knows he will, but he can't stop himself from loving her. Maybe it's because he knows that in the end, she'll survive him. He knows Gia's tougher than him. By virtue of being a woman, she's stronger. Girls are given the weight of the world, but nowhere to put it down. The power and magic born in that struggle. It's so terrifying to men that we invented reasons to burn y'all at the stake, just to keep our dicks hard. He paused. You made Gia's magic broom 10 times stronger than Sebastian's fangs. Which trumps monster? Tells me everything I need to know about why men are scared of women. Eva was too stunned to breathe. Against her better judgment, her eyes locked with Shane's again. Whatever he saw there made him hesitate for a moment, but then he kept going. You're not a man, he continued, but you write the fuck out of ambivalent masculinity. You're not a man, and it doesn't matter, because you write with sharpened senses and notice the unnoticed. And your creative intuition's so powerful, you can rock any narrative to sleep. You see, and you write. With 8, I do the same thing. He eyed her with an unmistakable familiarity. I'm just not as good as you. Belinda leaned over to Khalil and whispered, You want to reopen the fluff conversation, or you good? Eva's jaw went a little slack. Lightheaded, she nodded in slow motion. She would not let him see how thunderstruck she was, and she refused to let him have the last word. Well, she managed. That was quite the interpretation. It was quite the read, he said, his voice low. Yours, too. Appreciate it. Then Eva finally tore her eyes away from Shane. And only then did he seem to remember that he was in public and let out a small breath. The audience was loud in its utter silence. No one spoke. Everyone was transfixed. In over a decade of authordom, Shane Hall had barely spoken 5 comprehensible sentences to the public. And suddenly, he was here in person delivering a clear-eyed, feminist monologue about Eva Mercy? It was so thrillingly random and curiously unmistakably charged. Hardly anyone in the audience had read the cursed series before tonight, and now they couldn't get on their Amazon apps fast enough. Eva forgot about the audience. It was just her up there, trapped in the spaces between Shane's words, the things he didn't say. Eva nervously twisted her cameo ring around her finger. He's read my entire series, she thought, frantically fidgeting with her ring, every word. Just then, the single cursed fan in the audience burst into applause, his purple witch hat wiggling. Then he exclaimed, You're a fellow fangirl! Do you have Sebastian's S-Pen? Nah. It's been sold out every time I've logged on to evamercymercyme.com. Eva's face was on fire. He's tried to buy the pin? He knows my website? One more question, then we'll let Mr. Hall go, said Cece, breaking the spell with a dainty cough. She had to do this because Khalil was so upset about losing the audience's attention, he was practically spurting cartoon steam out of his ears. A 20-something ginger stood up. He looked like Prince Harry, if Prince Harry lived in Red Hook. Hi, I'm Rich from Slate. Brenda, Khalil, and Shane, your work is powerful. Eva, I wasn't familiar with you before this evening, but that was quite a testimony from Shane. Eva smiled weakly like a woman on her deathbed, trying to be brave for her loved ones. Can you detail some of the explicit racism you face as black authors? Shane?
Me? No.
No? Shane repeated.
No.
Is that not why we're here? Said Khalil.
It's why you're here, said Shane.
Okay, but why are you here? Eva's brain screamed, temples throbbing. She unconsciously snapped her trusty rubber band against the flesh of her right wrist.
As if hearing her thoughts telepathically, Shane shot her a quick glance. When he saw the rubber band, his expression went cloudy, concerned. He paused as if forgetting what to say next. It was a look she remembered vividly. Eva dropped her hand to her side.
You want the truth, Rich? Asked Shane.
Please, said Rich,
his eyes lighting up in the way that so many liberal white peoples had since the election. Like they were aching to be told how bad it was, how bad they were, their guilt turning them into masochists.
Rich's thumb hovered over the voice recorder app on his phone. In this climate, it's important to share testimonies. Let's hold America accountable. Let's take her crimes seriously.
Shane thumbed his bottom lip, thinking.
I don't take America seriously, though, he said with the blithe ease of a person who'd never needed to care about political correctness, or correctness in general.
The Random House publicity department would have an apologetic press release drafted by 8 a.m. the next morning. On the surface, he looked at ease. No one but Eva noticed that since their exchange, his hand had been gripping his mic so tightly, his fingertips were turning white. It was the only thing that gave him away. That, and his mic was shaking.
Look, this quote-unquote current socio-political climate, it's always been my climate. I've been up against Trumps and Pences and Lindsey Grahams since forever. The first one was the guard I was trapped alone in a cell with at 8 years old. No laws, no cameras, no mercy. What happened in that hour made me the kind of person who doesn't feel obligated to workshop racism with white people. He shrugged. The burden isn't on me to explain it, Rich. The burden's on y'all to fix it. Good luck.
Shane spoke with such blandness, it wasn't clear whether he cared in the extreme or not at all. Whatever the case, he'd delivered one hell of a soundbite. After refusing to shed light on the struggle, he did exactly that. And his one brief personal anecdote resonated more than an hour of Khalil's dick-first rants.
Understood, said Rich.
Squinting a little, Shane peered at the name tag on Rich's shirt. An impish look spread across his face, and he smoothly changed the subject.
I do, however, feel like discussing Carrot Tagliatelle.
Rich gasped.
You read my...
You're Rich Morgan, right?
You cover food on Slate sometimes.
That piece was revelatory. I didn't know you could make noodles out of vegetables.
I suggest the five-blade spiralizer from Amazon Prime, enthused Belinda.
I got mine at a lovely kitchen and home shop in Lake Como, said Cece.
Eva shut her eyes, wondering if someone had slipped acid in her seltzer. This conversation was ridiculous. Shane had single-handedly changed the mood in a room in milliseconds. When had he become so unguarded, so chatty? She'd never heard him say more than a grunt to anyone but her.
I'm ordering that shit, said Shane. I'm new to healthy eating, like I'm still on avocado toast. Rich, thanks for your service.
Rich beamed and floated down to his seat. Khalil was disgusted.
Help me understand this. You won't talk about racism, but you will open a discourse on hipster pasta?
Shane shrugged.
Health is wealth.
Cece waved her arm across the stage with a flourish.
Shane Hall, ladies and gentlemen.
And then Shane handed Cece his mic, wiped his damp palms on his jeans, did not look in Eva's direction, and returned to the wildly applauding audience. There was 20 minutes left of the discussion, but the panel was effectively over. Shane had stolen it out from under them. And Eva was a wreck.
Chapter 7. You first.
30 minutes later, the attendees were still crowding around the panelists, chatting them up, asking Belinda and Khalil to sign the beat-up paperbacks they'd carried in their bags. No one had brought any cursed books for Eva to sign, but she was suddenly hit with an influx of people itching to hear more about her feminist fantasy series. Meanwhile, the delightful cursed fan in the hat was acting as Eva's one-man street team, hopping from group to group, spreading the gospel according to Sebastian and Gia. It was everything Eva had hoped would happen. She was suddenly on the radar of a whole new demo of the book-buying population, literary types. And they would tweet and snap and Instagram about her, and buzz would grow, and fingers crossed, she'd ascend from popular niche author to a major voice in the book world. A thought leader. Someone whose interspecies sex movie you'd pay to see. But at that moment, she couldn't feel it. Both Belinda and Cece had tried several times to corner her with a ravenous, gossipy gleam in their eyes, but Eva had conveniently found herself entangled in a new conversation each time. She couldn't face them. Not yet. Where would she even start? Heart pounding, she glanced over at Shane from across the room. Visibly uncomfortable with the crowd of fans surrounding him, he'd somehow escaped to a back corner. The Shane of 2019 was more comfortable around people than the Shane of 2004, but still no social butterfly. He was pretending to talk on his phone. Eva knew he was pretending because he had the phone to his ear but wasn't saying anything. And she knew this because she was staring. And he'd been stealing glances at her, too. Here and there, and then as though he couldn't help himself, a lot. It was making her dizzy. Everything was making her dizzy. The dull throb in her temples, the impossible heels, the sexpot dress. It had gotten tighter somehow, sucking at her like saran wrap. She kept shifting it around her hips. It was a sample size 2, which was really a 0, and Eva was a size 4, but a PMS 6. Between all of that and her past so rudely colliding with her present, she hadn't breathed in hours. Her phone dinged with an incoming flurry of texts from Audrey, berating her for forgetting to shop for her feminist icon art final. Today, 7:35 p.m. My baby. Mommy, you forgot to get me the supplies for my portrait of Grandma Lizette. It's due Friday. I can't finish till I have feathers for her hair, but no, it's cool. Keep compromising my artistic creativity, TTYL, XOXO. For once, she chose to ignore her daughter. She was also pushing aside the shame she felt about raising Audrey to believe that her grandmother was a feminist icon. Revisionist history at best. Outright lie at worst. Her phone dinged again. A new post notification from the top cursed Facebook fan group. The moderator was a high-energy Vermont housewife whose wealthy Christmas tree distributor husband had funded her visits to every tour stop Eva had ever had. At Gaga for Gia was her biggest fan and the most resourceful. The Cursed Crew Group. Gossip incoming from some author thing at the Brooklyn Museum. Our own Eva plus randos spoke on a panel about racism or something. Sources say that one of us was on the stage. He's a famous author named Shane Hall, and he raved about Cursed. Also, you know how Eva has Sebastian's signature branded on her wrist, the zigzag S? This Shane guy has a G signature branded on his wrist. Same place, same zigzag script. G is for Gia, obviously. He's obsessed. But the plot thickens, friends. We all know that Gia doesn't write using the Phoenician alphabet, and her signature is never even mentioned in Cursed. And there's more. Shane Hall has bronze eyes, like Sebastian. As always, leave your Book 15 plot predictions in the comments, and hashtag stay cursed. Eva's stomach hit the ground. In a mere 45 minutes, her deeply private life had become a public soap opera. Eva had no idea why Shane had roared into her life on a Monday evening, but she knew one thing. He had to go. Not just now, but right now. The urgency wasn't really about Shane at all. Eva was scared of who she'd been with him, out of control, irresponsible. One big raging impulse. It had taken everything she had to bury that troubled teenager, and now he was here digging that girl up. 2 years after Shane, she had landed in New York with a new book, new money, and a new name. Genevieve Mercier had seamlessly become Eva Mercy. And Eva Mercy had devoted herself to building a life that was as safe as a Disney movie. She'd married the most uncomplicated man in the land and then had the friendliest divorce. She lived in the most family-oriented hood in Brooklyn. The Cursed series was smut, sure, but her refusal to try writing something new piqued safety. But she did think of him sometimes. Lying alone in a hospital bed at 2 a.m., or during bouts of writer's block. He'd appear on the fringes of her thoughts. No face, just a feeling. His warm, minty vanilla scent. The rough softness of his skin, like velvet caressed against the grain. They'd stayed out of each other's way for 15 years. Eva had to find out why he was here now. She was also prepared to offer her own Amex points to help book his outgoing flight. She needed Shane gone. Eva felt his eyes on her again. With a vague tilt of his chin, he beckoned her to his corner of the room. Frowning, she gestured for him to come to her instead. This situation was stressful enough without having to hobble across the room on stilts. Shane nodded, hesitated. Then he shoved his fists in his pockets and headed over to her. Eva slipped her phone into her clutch. When she looked back up, there was Shane, right in front of her. The room had been clanging with chatter, but to Eva it suddenly simmered down to a muted hum. God, had he gotten taller? He was so at ease in his bones now, so broad-shouldered, so much, too much. She reminded herself to breathe. She wasn't going to do this now. Take him in like this in public. After their little performance on stage, they had an audience. Hello, stranger, she said, and full body cringed. Hi. Shane's eyes locked in on hers. Her stomach seized. You're fine. Just say what you need to say and get out fast. Do it now. Can you meet? Do you wanna? Sorry, you go. No, you. Eva refocused, threw her shoulders back and started again. This was excruciating. Can you meet me at the Kosciuszko Cafe? Just down Eastern Parkway? Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Shane rarely did what he was told, but to this he nodded vigorously. Yeah, let's do that. Good, said Eva. And then she began stress babbling. I'd meet up now, but I need to pick up something for my daughter's art project, Feathers. Hashtag mom life. Also, I gotta get out of this dress. Then she thrust a wad of paper into his hand. It was her number, scrawled on a Hale and Hardy receipt from her purse. In case you need it. Shane tucked it into his jeans pocket and then paused a beat. Hey, I didn't know you'd be here. Not now. Honestly, you weren't listed on the invite. I'd never just show up. Not now. Eva was supposed to walk away then, but she couldn't move. She just stood there, temples thumping, heart thudding. People were pouring out of the auditorium, making plans for the rest of the night, snapping pics, giggling. Everything normal. And Shane and Eva were in the middle of it, being anything but. Acting on an impulsiveness Eva had thought she'd lost forever, she boldly leaned closer to Shane, narrowing the space between them. They were close. Too close. One thing, she whispered, her lips by his jaw. She didn't want anyone to overhear. Before I forget. What's that? Stop writing about me. Only Eva could have noticed the change in his expression. She saw the flinch. The slow, satisfied curl of his lip, his bronzy amber eyes flashing. It was like he'd been waiting years to hear those words. Like the girl whose pigtails he'd been yanking during recess all year had finally shoved him back. He looked gratified. In a voice both raspy and low, and so familiar, Shane said, "You first." Chapter 8. Thus with a kiss I die. 2004. Genevieve's temples were throbbing like crazy. The tussle with Lizette's pedo boyfriend early that morning had wrecked her head. And the sunlight beaming brightly on the schoolyard wasn't helping. It was the first Monday in June, and her first day at this Washington, D.C. high school. Admittedly, being new at the tail end of a senior year was awkward, but Genevieve was a pro at not fitting in. At her previous four high schools, she'd been either catnip for generic mean girls or ignored. But each night, with clockwork regularity, she'd whip out her steno pad and fix it. She'd rewrite the day in her favor, turn herself into a superhero, get them all back in fiction. "It's my own fault. Who'd want to be friends with me?" Her face was usually contorted into a pain-induced grimace. In terms of conversation, she had two settings, searingly blunt or deeply sarcastic. She didn't giggle. Genevieve didn't mean to be off-putting, but just like today, she'd usually lived five lives by the time she got to school. She hadn't yet learned how to put on a mask of being fine, despite her personal disasters. And so far, 12th grade had been a disaster. She'd always managed to maintain a 4.0, but this year her migraines had blossomed into gothic territory. Hurting too badly to focus on school, she'd started skipping, spending multiple days in bed, either in paralyzing agony, high from painkillers, or a nauseating combination of both. Her A's had become D-minuses, causing Princeton to rescind her admission. Princeton was supposed to save her. What would save her now? In the tub that morning, Genevieve had an epiphany. It was time for a friend. She wanted to know someone's secrets, and she needed someone to know hers. Washington, D.C. would be a fresh start. She'd just pick someone and dive in. How hard could it be? Horrible people had friends. O.J. Simpson had friends. Her last school, back in Cincinnati, had been tough. But West Truman High was way tougher. The schoolyard was erupting with kids in utter chaos, with no teachers in sight. The crowd was G-Unit video fresh in throwback jerseys, Tims, and candy-colored weaves. Percussion-frenzied go-go beats were blasting from a boombox, and half the school had on Madness tees. In contrast, Genevieve's look was tomboy meets I don't give a shit. She was wearing an ancient Nas Illmatic concert tee, sweatpants she'd cut into shorts, and Air Force Ones. Her curly coils were piled into a massive pony atop her head. As usual, she hid her scrawny frame in an oversized men's work shirt. She stationed herself by the bleachers in a cigarette graveyard. Operation Friend looked bleak. The schoolyard crowd seemed impenetrably cliquey. There were some lone students scattered on the bleachers, though. Squinting in the sun, she surveyed the rows for a friendly face. He was sitting in the top row of the bleachers, leaning against the heavily tagged brick wall. White tee and Tim's. A book was balanced on his lap, and he was reading it with his brow furrowed in concentration, chewing his lip. He looked like he was living the words. "That's how I read, too," she thought. Then he turned a page, and she caught a glimpse of his gold-flecked, chestnut eyes. The sun caught them, and they shone bronze. Was it a trick of the light? This boy radiated such peacefulness, an angel among mortals. Genevieve trusted beautiful boys. She was safe with them because they wanted prom queens, not her. Boys in her league were the ones to worry about. She headed up the rickety bleachers. That was when she noticed the fraying cast on his left arm. No signatures. She got a bit closer and saw a fresh scab slashed across his nose. A step closer and she saw that his knuckles on both hands were bruised purple and green. And his pupils were really, really dilated. Okay, he was looking less angelic, but now that she was standing in front of him, it was too late to turn back. He peered up at her with mild curiosity and then went back to his book. James Baldwin's Another Country.
Hey, she said. Can I sit here?
Silence. Before she lost her nerve, she plopped down next to him.
I'm Genevieve Mercier.
He frowned at her.
It's French.
He gave her a look like, no shit.
Is it cool that I'm sitting here?
No.
Are you an asshole?
Oui. Social experiment failed. Genevieve knew better than to equate beauty with perfection. She lived with a former Miss Louisiana who looked pristine but had once dusted their entire apartment with a Neutrogena face wipe. She still had 15 minutes until the bell would ring, and in the meantime, the sun was slaughtering her head. Clumsily, she rifled through her backpack and pulled out a palm-sized roller vial of lavender peppermint essential oil and rubbed it over her temples. It tingled pleasantly. Then Genevieve noticed he was watching her, his book abandoned.
I get migraines, she explained. It's so bad I barely ever move my head. For example, if I want to look to the right, I have to move my whole body like this.
She swiveled from her waist to face him. His expression was cloudy with distrust and confusion. Is this a setup? Is someone about to jump me? His voice was drowsy and bored.
You a dealer? My bad if I owe you money.
I look like a dealer to you?
I've had girl dealers, he shrugged. I'm a feminist.
I wouldn't set you up to get jumped. I'd do it myself.
He checked her petite frame.
You're the size of a Jolly Rancher.
I have a Napoleon complex.
Girls can't have that.
Okay, feminist.
Genevieve rolled her eyes, causing a small tornado in her temples. Two girls walked by, glanced up at them, and giggled before scurrying away. He scowled at her.
Why are you here?
I'm trying to make friends, said Genevieve.
I don't have friends.
Can't imagine why.
I don't know what to say to people.
He stuck the eraser end of a pencil into his cast and, in slow-mo, dragged it back and forth.
What do normal people talk about? Prom? Murder, Inc.?
Fuck if I know, she admitted. It's all good, though. We can sit in silence.
Knock yourself out.
He returned to his book. So he wasn't super welcoming, but at least now she knew someone at this big, intimidating school. At a loss for what to do now, she shielded her eyes from the sun with her hand and rubbed more oil into her temples. Genevieve sensed the guy watching her. She was about to explain to him the tension-relieving benefits of lavender when he pulled Ray-Bans out of his jeans pocket and handed them to her. She put them on, stunned by his generosity. Then he exhaled with resignation,
shut the book, and leaned back against the brick wall, eyes closed.
Genevieve couldn't help but stare. She'd never seen a face like his. Her stomach fluttered a bit, and she bit her lip. No, she couldn't get a crush. She didn't trust herself. She always went too far. But looking at him wouldn't hurt. She studied his dreamy, far-out expression, wondering what he was on.
Morphine? She asked. Ketamine?
He opened one eye. You sure you're not a dealer?
I have legal prescriptions. I'm basically an apothecary, she paused. Oh, true apothecary, thy drugs are quick.
Thus with a kiss I die, he replied reflexively. Keats?
Shakespeare, exclaimed Genevieve. Remember which play?
Romeo and Juliet, he grumbled.
You a writer, or just an AP English ho?
He shrugged.
I write too. You any good?
Same shrug.
She smirked.
I'm better.
And then he chuckled. And it was an unlikely surprising thing, like being trampled by a unicorn stampede in Narnia.
Jesus, he was a lot.
She needed a distraction.
I'm hungry,
she blurted out awkwardly.
You want a peach? I have two.
He shook his head. Genevieve unzipped her backpack, unearthing a peach and a delicate, razor-sharp pocket knife. Propping her elbows on her knees, she clicked open the blade and angled it along the seam of the peach. It was always so satisfying, feeling the tautness of the skin under the blade, the tension. With a gentle press, the skin burst and juice dribbled out. She caught it with her tongue. Then she cut off a piece, using her thumb as an anchor, and popped it into her mouth. Chomping, Genevieve glanced at her new friend. He looked like he'd just seen his first natural rainbow. That's how you eat peaches?
I like knives.
He blinked. Once. Twice. Then rapidly shook his head as if descrambling his brain. Nah, man, he said. You gotta go. I'm trying to stay out of trouble.
Trouble? But...
You're dangerous. And I'm worse. I'd be hazardous to your health.
I'm already a health hazard.
Genevieve ripped off the sunglasses for emphasis.
We're friends now. You said you don't know how to talk to people, but you're talking to me.
I said I can't talk to normal people. He eyed her. You're not normal.
She wasn't sure, but it felt like a compliment. She felt understood. This was new. There was that stomach flutter again.
How do you know I'm not normal? We just met.
What are you then?
Genevieve rested her chin in her hands, her elbows on her thighs. She didn't know how to answer.
What was she?
She was tired. Tired of being sick, tired of her mouth getting her into trouble, tired of moving. Tired of fighting off the kind of men who thought mothers and daughters were a package deal, and tired of hating who she was. Maybe she shouldn't tell him the truth. It was too ugly. But maybe honesty was what it took to make a real friend.
Be nice. Be good. I'm not nice, she admitted quietly. Not good.
He nodded slowly. Then he scratched his jaw, peering down at his Tim's. Neither am I. That was how it started. That small confession.
Genevieve had never told anyone she wasn't okay, and it sounded like he hadn't either. She turned her face toward him to speak, and froze, because his eyes were already on her. Something crackled between them, an understanding, a mutual pull. And it was so extraordinary, so involuntary, Genevieve actually gasped. Stunned, she parted her lips a little. And then she couldn't breathe at all, because slowly he dragged his drowsy, drugged-out gaze from her eyes to her mouth, and then back up to her eyes. A sure, satisfied smile crept across his face. Hesitantly, she smiled back. Then it was over. He went back to his book like that incredibly intimate look hadn't even happened. And Genevieve's world was knocked off its axis. But of one thing, she was certain.
I'm supposed to know him, she thought. So, she breathed. What's your name?
I told you I don't have friends. Let me brood in peace.
Don't fight it. What's with the cast?
He sighed. I keep breaking my arm.
Damn. Calcium deficiency?
No, I do it on purpose. Genevieve gawked at him. The bell rang. A baritone voice shouted something over the loudspeakers, and the bustling student population filed into the red brick building. Neither one of them moved.
You don't break your own bones, she whispered. You're just antisocial and trying to freak me out so I'll go away.
Is it working?
No.
Genevieve was thunderstruck.
What's wrong with you?
He sighed. A lot.
I can't imagine doing something so sick.
No?
She followed his eyes, which had traveled down to her right arm. Her men's shirt had slid off her shoulder, and the rows of shallow, horizontal slices on her upper arm were visible. A few were covered with band-aids. The rest were scabs.
and some had grown into scars. Genevieve wore her big shirt daily to hide this, but it had slipped at school a few times. She'd always been prepared to say it was eczema. No one had ever asked. She yanked her sleeve back up on her shoulder.
You don't know what my life's like, she spat.
Try me, he said, his galaxy eyes eating her alive. A wild current charged through her, something primal, dirty, desperate, confusing. Was this being seen for what she really was? Being witnessed? It was heady and terrifying. Genevieve had hoped for someone to share secrets with, but she hadn't bet on someone beating her crazy for crazy. And she hadn't bet on the person being a boy who looked like that, who looked at her like that. Somehow, he'd snaked into her head and sunk his fangs into her brain, poisoning her with hope. A cruel trick. Genevieve lurched forward and grabbed his tee in her fist, yanking him down to her level.
Stop looking at me like your dick's in my mouth, she said, seething,
still clutching the peach in her left hand.
You like me now? Think you're original? Boys love to torture the weird girl, the freak, but guess what? I'm already in pieces, so...
With feral quickness, he plucked her fist from his shirt and pinned her arm behind her back. Genevieve arched, drawing a breath. A delicious tremble tore through her. He held her like that for a beat and then brought his mouth to her ear.
Don't. Don't what?
Call yourself a freak. He let her go. Then he grabbed the peach out of her hand and took a deliberately indulgent, wet bite. He wiped the back of his mouth with his hand.
I'm Shane, he said, a spark of triumph in his eye, and walked away.
Genevieve found her classroom. Peering through the doorway, she saw chaos. A couple of kids were in a cipher. One girl was unbraiding her hair, and a boy was banging his desk on the floor. Four kids were napping in their chairs, another on the floor. At the chalkboard, the teacher was explaining photosynthesis, which Genevieve had learned in private school in fifth grade. In a far corner, tipped back way too far in his chair, was Shane. She wasn't ready to see him after whatever monumental thing they'd just experienced. She'd staggered away from the bleachers, feeling like she'd toppled into a tornado. She wiggled the nicked vintage cameo ring she'd once stolen from Lizette's jewelry box. It usually calmed her, but not now. With a deep breath, she entered the room. The class gradually quieted to watchful silence. 30 pairs of eyes followed Genevieve to an empty desk in the front. She sat down. Reacting to the sudden stillness, the teacher turned around.
Who are you?
Genevieve Mercier. Sorry, I got lost.
We're all lost. Mr. Weismuller was whippet thin, with a sallow complexion. He looked like he had mono.
Class, welcome Genevieve.
The fuck's that name, though? A girl shouted.
Young, why her name sound like Pepe Le Pew?
Genevieve sank lower in her chair. Mr. Weismuller turned to face the chalkboard.
This bitch thinks she a Leah 'cause she got a half a cup of hair.
That ain't hers, said a tall girl in apple-bottom jeans, sitting behind Genevieve.
She turned around to face her. From his corner in the back, Shane caught her eye and shook his head, a warning that Genevieve ignored.
What'd you say? I said that hair ain't yours, ho, and what?
Yeah, and what?
Said a slight boy who materialized next to Applebottom, presumably her boyfriend. The whole class was watching Genevieve. She was surrounded. The only person she knew was four rows back. She wasn't going to win.
Nothing, she muttered.
I thought not,
said Applebottom, and the class resumed cutting up. Behind her, Genevieve heard the boyfriend whisper,
Yeah, do that shit,
to Applebottom. There was an electric calm. Suddenly, Genevieve's neck snapped back hard, and her head felt eerily weightless.
She turned around, and Applebottom was grasping 3/4 of Genevieve's ponytail in one hand and scissors in the other. The boyfriend cackled.
I'm getting Principal Miller,
Mr. Weismuller said with a robotic lack of urgency, and left the room. Genevieve felt behind her neck where her hair no longer was. A red fury raged through her, and she pushed Applebottom's desk violently, knocking her backward. Applebottom shrieked, unhurt but tangled under a chair.
Kill this new bitch, screamed the boyfriend to no one.
No,
said Shane, standing up.
You fight me.
Everybody looked at the boyfriend. It was clear he didn't want to do this.
One girl went, nope, when Shane starts with his shit, I'm out. Y'all ain't gonna fuck around and get me suspended right before graduation.
She grabbed her backpack and left.
Fight me, nigga, Shane repeated.
They were nose to nose now. The crowd formed a wide circle around them. The boyfriend threw a weak punch, knocking Shane across the nose. Shane folded his arm across his chest. He hit Shane harder. Then Shane whispered something in his ear, causing him to really rear back and crack Shane on the temple. Then the class was shouting, fuck him up! Fuck him up! And the boyfriend shoved Shane to the ground, fists flying. Shane's nose and lip were bleeding, but he didn't fight back.
Stop! Genevieve yelled. Jesus Christ, Shane, it's just hair!
Abruptly, Shane heaved the kid off him and stood up. His breathing was jagged, erratic. And then he lifted up his hurt arm, the one in the cast, and whacked the boyfriend across the cheekbone, hard, with a sickening thwack. The boyfriend dropped. Shane clutched his ravaged arm to his chest, the bone rebroken. He stood there trembling, gritting his teeth, radiance draining from his skin. Then he shot Genevieve a bloody smile and crumpled to the ground. It was the most terrifying, graceful thing she'd ever seen.
Someone get help, he's...
The last thing Genevieve saw was Applebottom's fist inches from her nose and then a zillion bright lights. 6 hours later, Genevieve and Shane lay in cots next to each other in a curtain-enclosed space at United Medical Center's emergency room. They'd been there all day with the school guidance counselor, Miss Guzman, perched between them in a fold-out chair. The boyfriend was discharged and went home with his grandmother, sporting a fractured cheekbone. Applebottom left with her aunt and a bruised shoulder. Shane's arm was reset with a new cast, and between his upper lip and left eyebrow he had a total of 14 stitches. Genevieve got off easiest, with a ghastly black eye and an even ghastlier bob. She and Shane were suspended, but as 17-year-old minors, they couldn't legally be discharged until a parent or guardian picked them up. Ms. Guzman couldn't reach Lizette, which was no surprise. Ms. Guzman couldn't find Shane's guardian either. Apparently, he lived in a foster kid shelter and no administrators were reachable. Now they were just lying there, waiting. While Miss Guzman dipped outside for her 37th smoke break, Genevieve was in agony. That punch had rattled her brain. The ER docs had treated her bruised eye, but despite her increasingly panicked pleas, they'd given her only Advil for her head. At her pain level, this was as helpful as an M&M. Shaking badly, she'd curled into a ball, clawing into her forearm with her nails as a distraction.
Genevieve, Shane whispered from his cot.
Genevieve,
she groaned through gritted teeth.
You good?
No.
She watched him peer out into the hallway and then shut the curtain. He dug in his jeans pocket, yanked out a baggie of pills, and grabbed a Dixie cup of water. He handed both to her.
Will OxyContin help?
Grind it up, she rasped.
Shane pulled an ATM card, name unknown, from his magic pocket and cut the pills into 4 lines of chunky powder on a metal medical tray. Gently, he held the tray under her nose, steadying the back of her head with his good hand. And Genevieve sniffed each line. It went down rough, but worked fast. The hurt dulling, her face slackening, muscles going gooey.
so good.
Oxy didn't kill the pain, just made it so it didn't matter. He smoothed her ruined curls from her face. She tucked his hand under her cheek. It belonged there.
You're my best, best, best friend, she sighed groggily and goofily.
Better learn how to pronounce your name then.
I don't care what you call me, she slurred. Just call me.
Shane smiled. Let's go.
Where?
I know a place. But no one gives a shit where I am. You got parents who do?
Genevieve thought about Lizette at home, waiting for her daughter to wake her up for her gross job at her disgusting boyfriend's lounge. Her answer was obvious. They walked down the hallway, cool, calm. But the second they hit the exit doors, they linked hands and ran. Wherever Shane was going, she was going too.